the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
I think it was about nigh on two centuries ago when Mrs. Beaton effectively came out with her original cookbook. Things have actually moved on considerably from that particular perspective when it comes to nutrition and the importance of nutrition, etc. We're delighted to welcome to the program today ace nutritionist Charlotte Sterling Reed, who's written the ideal go-to book when it comes to the family that eats together, stays together. Charlotte, a delight as ever to welcome you to the program. How are you?
Oh, thank you. What a lovely introduction. I'm very, very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's always great to connect with your good self. And I was fascinated by this survey that you've undertaken through social media, which reveals that 84% of parents find it daunting cooking a meal that the whole family will enjoy. As I say, we've gone a wee bit away from those days of Mrs. Beaton's tips and techniques to actually get the best out of flour, for instance.
Yeah, I think things have changed so much recently, and I think we can't ignore the fact that our environment and our lifestyles have all changed, and there's so much more food accessible, and there's so much more, you know, food available from the supermarket that means we don't have to cook. And obviously, you know, times have changed so significantly, but I think that doesn't take away from the fact that it's now put a huge amount of pressure on parents and on families to be trying to feed their family healthy foods and feed them well and eat together, and that often doesn't work out. And I was there myself when I had my second child. I found it overwhelming being in the kitchen trying to feed everybody when I'm tired, when I haven't slept. So I was right there in the thick of it thinking, how is everybody else doing this? Because I'm struggling, and I cook, you know, I love cooking, I enjoy it. So that's really why I wrote the book, to be honest with you.
Well, indeed, the book is entitled How to Feed Your Family. You are indeed a double Sunday Times best-selling author, and quite rightly so from that point of view. But there are people who probably will be listening to this, Charlotte, who will say, well, that's all well and good for Charlotte to say that. But, you know, what about my child who basically refuses to eat any greens whatsoever and always pushes their sprouts to one side, plays with their food, etc.? How can you actually ensure that they are cooked different and nutritious meals, which allows them also to try some new foods as well?
Yeah, completely. And that's, you know, a big part of the book is talking about that idea of, you know, separate meals or having to try and feed everybody different things. And also, I obviously touch a lot on food refusal because it's a massive subject for families. And I think food refusal, first of all, I want families to realize that actually this is a very, very normal part of family life for kids to go through phases where they don't want what you're eating. But it doesn't mean you have to change up what you're offering. It doesn't mean that you have to get rid of all of the idea of a nice meal together as a family. And actually, one of the things I talk about quite a lot in the book is this idea of almost like buffet meals or Mediterranean kind of spreads, where you're just picking bits and you're plopping it all together on the table, and you allow everybody to sit down, relax, calm, take the pressure off of that meal and the pressure off of watching what everybody's eating, and just let them help themselves. And that's going to take time. It takes a long time for children to become familiar and build up a kind of, I guess, in inverted commas, relationship with food. But actually, us stepping back, taking the pressure off, and just really focusing on what we feed ourselves can have much better impact than can sitting there and telling your children, you must eat. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. The other key thing that certainly comes across from my initial overview of the text is that you've gone for affordability. I mean, that's probably even more important these days, given the crisis times that we're actually in when it comes to finances.
Yeah, I think there's this real myth that healthy eating has to cost a lot of money. I'm not saying it can't. It absolutely can, you know, but there are ways and means to feed your family without it breaking the bank. And yes, it's a bit more difficult. Yes, you might have to be a little bit more savvy. But I think there's also real kind of negative connotations around things like frozen food and tinned foods, but actually they really needn't be. And I have tapped into a lot of those in the book. So there's lots of kind of leftover tray bakes. There's lots of meals where I just tapped into frozen veggies, or I've just used store cupboard staples. And I really did try and focus on those. But not only that, I've got a whole section on reducing food waste, making the most of your meals, and using up store cupboard staples. So, you know, I really do focus on that in the book. And it's important for me to tap into that, especially in this current climate.
We did a feature a few weeks ago which suggested that a third of the population find it difficult to actually boil an egg. Now, the shocking incarnation of that obviously means that obviously we're not doing as much cooking as we should be. We need to start earlier. Is that just one of the reasons why it's important to get children involved in mealtime and cooking as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, it's easier said than done to have this kind of beautiful family mealtime. And again, that's what I talk about in the book. But, I'm running this webinar this evening with Stocker Trip Trap. And one of the reasons I love them is because they do talk about bringing everybody into the table together and that importance right from the start when your baby's first starting their journey on solid foods is bring them to the table, let them see you eating. And I think that is so key. If you can make that mealtime become important, even if you don't have a table and you're not sitting around the table, bringing everybody together, eating together, letting your little ones see you eating, because actually they learn so much more about what, how, and where to eat from observation. Just like they copy us with our language, with our facial expressions, they're also copying us with our eating. And again, Stocker Trip Chat does allow that. Bring baby to the table right at the start of weaning, get them involved in those meal times. And that's a really important concept for me. And it can be tough for families, but if you can do that, you're really on the right track.
Now, you've got two fine souls, 5-year-old Rafi and 2-year-old Ada. Any particular challenges that they've cropped up in terms of, well, at least you can be grateful to them for at least giving you another chapter in the book?
Exactly. Well, to be honest with you, my last book, which was How to Feed Your Toddler, was really, while I was going through a tricky time with my daughter, I think the main thing I found with having two kids and being a a child feeding specialist, it's been the biggest eye-opener for me is that they were both so different with their feeding journeys, and they still are now. One has a huge appetite and is much more experimental with food, and the second one is a lot more reserved, and she will just do as she wants. She will eat to her appetite. She has a very small appetite, and she's a lot more selective with what she will eat. So it's been a massive eye-opener for me, and it has certainly helped me to hone my advice that I give out to parents for sure.
How to Feed Your Family is out now. It's available presumably from most online sellers
Yeah.
and books and various other areas from that point of view. And also presumably you'd like to promote the notion of Stocker and their iconic Trip Trap chair, which is quite difficult to say at this time of the day.
Trip trap
But
chair, yeah.
exactly. That's
Well,
stocker.com presumably.
we're doing a webinar tonight as well. So we're doing a webinar about feeding your family at 7 o'clock tonight. So if anybody's interested in that, it's completely free to attend, and we're going to be talking all about feeding your family, tips and tricks, and I'm going to be doing a Q&A with anyone who wants to attend.
Well, that's very impressive and good stuff from that point of view. And what's your own go-to meal, Charlotte, in terms of the easy thing to prepare? I mean, is it the boiled egg, the ubiquitous wonderfulness of that, or are you a bit more, I suspect you're a bit more complex?
Well, not necessarily. My son is the biggest fan of scrambled egg on toast. It's always a go-to option. And I always find there's ways that you can kind of bulk that out a little bit more, add a few extra veggies and things like that. But I would say that we have, porridge for breakfast is always a winner in my house because it's so simple and it's so easy to add lots to it. And then for lunch, it would probably normally be something like a wrap, a sandwich. And I've got little recipes for that in the book. And then for dinner, I do like to vary dinner, but I always try and use ones that you can freeze, you can cook in bulk and freeze. So I've got risottos, curries, and again, leftover veg tray bakes or soups in the book, which are absolutely my staples now. And I just pop them in the freezer, pop them out the night before, and then I don't have to cook.
This is why every home needs a Charlotte Sterling Reid, or at least a copy of your book. That's all we can say.
Oh, thank you so much.
Charlotte Sterling Reid, nutritionist extraordinaire. Keep on keeping on and speak again soon.
Thank you so much, Alex. Take care.
You got some rain on our hands. It's falling, falling fast. But I'm okay. Have you got anything ready to say? I could worry less about the rain outside, and I don't mind this storm is mine. You see, the weather has never been as clever as to lead us along with no. Troubles can wash. like sitting here with you. We've got nothing to do. Let the rain guide you through. The show never showed, but it never does until I see all the love in front of me. You see, the weather has never been as clever as to leave us alone with nowhere to go. And all your trouble can wash away, 'cause you can stay with me. Has never been as clever as to leave us alone with nowhere to go. And all your trouble can wash away, 'cause you can stay.
You may well consider that as being a meteorological condition. I personally would regard it as an absolutely sensational piece of music by an artist I hadn't heard of before. Of course, Starship Gazelle. It's not the latest track, but it was Rain, a wonderful sort of aspect there, which was released about a year ago. And we're delighted to welcome the creative genius behind Starship Gazelle to the program to actually share with us the joy and wonderment of all sorts of things from his bass over in the States, of course. It's singer-songwriter Shara Granza. How are you, Shara?
Doing great, Alex. Good to be here with Southside Radio. You know, it's early in the morning for me, but I think discussing the song and discussing the music is going to be fantastic. Thanks for the kind words.
Well, it's delighted to connect to it with your good self. Of course, you're on the West Coast, so that's perfectly okay. Our next contributor, of course, who's got, I'm sure, heaps of questions for you, is from North Carolina. She's one of our ace correspondents, so it's not quite as early in the morning as it is over on the West Coast. You're not in San Francisco, though. You're in San Jose, is that right?
Yes, I'm in San Jose, exactly.
That's all right. I mean, there's obviously a cliched line about, do you know the way to San Jose? Obviously, because you're there, but that's by the by.
Yeah.
Let's turn to Jessica. Jessica, we played Rain. We've got to say the genius behind the Starship Gazelle with us now. Any initial thoughts, Jessica?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's so dreamy and beautiful. I really enjoyed it. And I'm actually, my first thought was that I'm really curious about how you came up with the name for Starship Gazelle. I would love to know about it.
Great. So I had a roommate in Seattle during my freshman year of college, and we were embarking on creating this solo project together. He'd actually collaborated on some of the early Starship Gazelle stuff with me, a couple songs, and from there, you know, I was toying with the idea of the name Stargazers because I had another friend who really liked stargazing, and we thought that'd be a cool name. And that eventually evolved into Starship Gazelle. And like, I think it's evocative of like maybe like a Star Trek vehicle or like a Star Wars vehicle, like the Millennium Falcon or something like that. It also resembles like Tame Impala, which is a vehicle name, or Cobra Starship, which is like a cool pop punk band that I used to listen to when I was like 14, 13. I think that's where the name came from. And I like to think there's, you know, fun aliens inside a UFO making music for the world. Yeah.
That's so celestial. It's very fun. I think it suits the sound of the song. How did you get into music? Has this always been a dream of yours to make music?
Yeah, I think I was like singing Bollywood songs at a young age because, my parents are Indian and stuff. And then I was introduced to American music when I was in fourth grade. So I was around 10 years old or something. And, I'd already been singing. I had a friend who was getting me into drumming through tapping around just on desks and stuff in the classroom, but, tapping out solid rhythms. And then I got my first guitar when I was 12, so around seventh grade. And, taught myself how to read like guitar sheet music, and started playing the piano a couple years later, and it found me as something really captivating, and started making some covers on YouTube. So I've just been making music since I was about 12, and yeah, I think it found me. While I was super interested in music, my friend had a guitar when I was around 10, so I bought a beginner guitar, and then I bought like a full-size guitar when I was 12. But yeah, I think it was destiny. I think I was meant to be attracted to music and make music. So yeah. Yep.
Your latest single, of course, is called I Feel the Sun, brackets, Apple Pipe, close
Yeah.
brackets.
Yeah.
Do you have a kind of thing about the weather, or is it meteorology? Because obviously we launched with rain, and I was just thinking, I feel the sun. Even if we actually go back a little bit further and listen to Cemetery Girl, it starts off with a kind of weather condition. Is that a case of, yeah, whatever the weather, I'll write some great music?
Yeah, so there's like some lyrics about snow in Cemetery Girl, and this one's about the sun. It's actually a pun on the word Ray. My friend's name was Ray at the time. I had a friend named Ray. So it's about her, which is pretty cool. And I guess, just accepting the weather for what it is. The apple pipe is actually supposed to signify like creating a pipe with an apple and filling it with marijuana or cannabis, that kind of thing. So
Yeah, we're not
maybe
going to endorse that. Don't worry. I mean, it's by the by. It's an interesting line, but obviously we've got certain sensitivities about that, and obviously in Britain that would be illegal. But that's by the by.
Oh yeah, so it's grass is legal here in California, which is nice. But that's what the reference there is about. So it's the lyrics are grass on the moor, cedar in the springtime, sip of the moon, smoke me out an apple pipe. So I think the moor is evocative of like a hill or a grassy hill, a grassy clearing. There's actually a spot on my college campus that this song was written about, where people would meet and skateboard and sit in the sun and picnic or whatever. One of the nicer places to hang out on campus. So it's actually about that place. And yeah, when it comes to the weather, I definitely think I try to write lyrics about, the weather or nature a lot. So yeah.
West Coast has obviously had a long and profound history over 6 decades of being evocative of, as Jessica actually said, celestial or indeed out there lyrics and so on. Did you have any musical influences yourself? I mean, are you a kind of a keen follower of some of the psychedelic bands that emerged from there? Are you more kind of Birds fan? Are you more, or is it a case of no? I just go back as far as the Spice Girls and then that's it.
Yeah, I'm actually not familiar with the Spice Girls, but I'm a pretty big Birds fan. I really like Younger Than Yesterday and Turn, Turn, Turn. Those two albums are amazing to me. Times Are Changing, Oh Susanna, CTA 102. There's a lot of great tracks on there. So I've been listening to those records since I was like 19, I want to say. But yeah, they're part of the inception of psychedelic rock, which is great. I think there's some like chamber pop influence on this track with the harmonies and the guitars and the piano. And I think I was thinking about this before the interview today, and I think there's, if you listen to the raw melody without the harmonies, the way the song was written with just the piano, I think there's a little bit of 50s pop too, like Everly Brothers or Buddy Holly. I don't think the intention was to be too psychedelic, but I think the way I used the mixer actually resulted in kind of a resulted in like these resulted in like psychedelic motion, I think, with the guitars. Like there are these really cool swells and changes in dynamic, which kind of makes the thing come together, just by using my mixer to kind of run levels, and change them as the song progresses, which is a technique that, songs use subtly, and I think I use it to great effect on this song. And yeah, I think there's a cool synth on the chorus, which is actually dialing in that tone was kind of fun, and it's got like a maybe an alien-esque sound to it. So yeah.
But it certainly is interesting because even in terms of duration, it kind of it evokes the short and very brief but impactful sound of many pop songs. Of course, when 2 or 3 minutes was very very much the kind of standard line that you get presumably for radio play as well.
Oh yeah. It's actually a short song. I thought about a bridge almost when it was done. I almost forgot the shuffle in the second verse. I forgot to address that. I don't know if you'd perceive that as psychedelic. It's kind of like like a fine line between what's psychedelic and what's not. But I think like the shuffle was actually I kind of dialed in a hi-hat and then changed it to a shaker. Kind of an interesting sounding shaker in the software, and it results in like a weird sound effect, which is like characteristic of indie these days, is they'll have, sort of interesting new fun sounds. So it's like, going on in the verses to kind of make the thing kind of danceable or something, catches your ear, makes the song have some momentum. So I like that about it too. But I guess to answer the question again, the intention wasn't to make something super psychedelic, but I think the sum of the elements ended up being a little bit that way.
It's a bit like the old classic literary line of Death of the Author. Once you've released your creation into the world, it's the audience that actually makes sense or not of what the actual aspect happens to be.
Yes. Death of the author. Yeah, I think I've heard of this before. Yeah.
Jessica, back to yourself.
I would love to know if you have any summer plans for your music, if you're creating any more, or if you're thinking about venues that you want to play at.
Oh yeah, so I actually have played live only once since COVID ended at this restaurant. I used to play live a lot before then at open mics. I used to play like three open mics a week and 2 songs at each open mic. And then I'd also like play at venues once or twice a month. There was one summer where I played like 10 shows, which was pretty cool, like 2 or 3 a month. And that was cool. I played at a winery, a record store, in front of a bar and a restaurant, and a bunch of cool venues that summer. Actually, I was in a band recently that kind of we parted ways, but we were getting ready to play live. I was the drummer in that band, and then before our first show, we kind of disbanded. But yeah, I mean, I intend on playing live again soon. I think my favorite venue is still open in San Francisco. It's known as Honey Hive Gallery, and I've played there a couple times. Playing there again would be amazing. And I think my dream venue is actually Bottom of the Hill, but I wouldn't want to play there without a drummer or a band, because I can do the whole boombox thing, which is, having a band in the background, like a drummer in the background, and then play my guitar and sing. But I think to do the venue justice, I'd want a drummer, so I think I'd want to find a drummer before playing there. So Bottom of the Hill, Honey Hive Gallery. I could probably play at El Rio again, which was a cool venue. They have like a really great patio and stuff. So I have a lot of San Francisco venues in mind. There's also this local jazz club. It used to be a jazz club, and now it's in San Jose, and now it's more for like rock and roll or indie musicians, which is cool. So maybe I'll try and play through there. It's called Mama Kin. So
And of
yeah.
course, that's great for the San Francisco audience, and it's great for our San Francisco correspondents and our West Coast folk. But I can tell Jessica's saying, what about Charlotte, North Carolina? What about some of the East Coast stuff there? What about indeed Lincoln, England, Dublin, Ireland? What about the international scene? Would you intend sort of
Sure.
looking to those expansions?
Yes. As I see where my listeners are coming from, I had a lot of listeners in New York, in London, recently in Istanbul, Turkey, where I was with my family, a couple months ago. Kind of a weird place to be, but thinking about touring elsewhere outside of the state, outside of the local area, I think I do want to grow my fan base a little bit before that. I think the prospects are very real to tour through that area, either alone or with a band. It'd obviously be smaller venues based on my sound at first. I think bringing the music to the people would be fun, and it's a good way to get out of the house and a fun way to
And prove that
travel.
you're a real person. We have an era where with ChatGPT, with AI, people might turn around and say, ah, yes, well, we've heard about the Starship Gazelle, but it's all computerized, isn't it? No, there's a real life human being behind it.
That the Feel the Sun track is all me, from the drummer to the synths, to the piano, to the guitars. I have had other musicians feature on some of my songs, but this one was all me. I guess I'm pretty proud of this track. Going back to the venues thing, I actually, if there were more musicians networking with me, this would be the tour thing would be cool. But there was actually a guy who found my Bandcamp who reached out to me to play with me at Honey Hive Gallery in San Francisco, and he was like, "Oh, let's play a show together. I love your music." And he was actually a really cool guy from LA, and we had a little heart to heart at the show, and he made, psychedelic indie folk too. His sound was actually resembling Neutral Milk Hotel, and I still listen to him. We're still in touch. So more opportunities like that would drag me to Europe, or around there.
Okay, we mentioned this earlier, but I want to just dial back to the essence of the track, because I did actually thoroughly enjoy it. And that Cemetery Girl, I mean, the video as well, which you can find obviously via YouTube. You can type in Starship Gazelle and you find that. I mean, it kind of the line of that basically, I mean, soaring melodies, intimate lyrics, keen sense of the imagination. Of course, directed from that point of view. Was that Were you influenced by Buffy? Was it? I mean, what was the line, or was it just a case of I want a gothic feel to my work?
Now rises the burning sun. She's burning my eyelids. I begin to run back to the night at the park where we meet. Drive up to nowhere, going by my feet. She's a cemetery girl, quiet as winter snow. She touched my soul. Sky of tears, waking up
what you're gonna find there. Never know what you're gonna find when she breaks like a thousand green sparrows. Lights the way to tomorrow. She breathes like a dead ocean. She sleeps in the sad forest. Travels away when the gold leaves. Travels away when the gold leaves. Never know what you're gonna find there. Never know what you're gonna find there. Never know what you're gonna find there. Oh, she's a sad, dead girl. Quiet as winter. She touched my soul, losing
Okay, Cemetery Girl. Yeah, it was definitely, I was trying to embody something very gothic. I had this weird idea for the music video that the girl would wear like something like a Victorian dress with eyeliner, or have blood coming out of her eyes, like gothic Victorian feel. I really like the TV show Penny Dreadful. So my original vision for the music video didn't come together because I let the director take the reins. But that music video is pretty cool. I mean, it's just about this, you know, I wake up in the morning, I'm playing the guitar, and this guy kind of kidnaps me, puts me in the back of his car, takes me on an adventure, and then I come out of the trunk, and there's this girl, and the girl is actually, it's kind of like a short film in this regard, because the girl's supposed to poison me with her venom or something. She's like a witch, and she poisons me. She's praying at a graveyard, you know, summoning evil spirits, talking to demons, whatever. She's the cemetery girl, and I'm kind of running through, she's chasing me through the cemetery, and maybe, you know, maybe there's a little bit of interplay between me and her. And then it ends with me kissing her, but she rips my guts out or something, or she kills me. It's a fatal kiss because she's a witch.
It sounds pretty much like an average day in the life of the Golden Gate City, really. I mean, you know, surely that's you start off the morning by being put in a car, dumped in the car from that point of view. It's one of the reasons why some of us Brits are just a little bit concerned sometimes. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Jessica always has a question, which we normally reserve for our writers, our authors, our sort of writing questions, etc. But I think actually, as a creator, and we set this up actually yesterday with a theatrical agent, or indeed a literary agent, I think it actually sort of carries weight as well. It involves nutrition, Shah. So are you ready with respect to Jessica's nutrition-based question and various other things? Jessica, over to you.
Yeah, well, first, I'm from the South in the U.S., and the Gothic literature and film scene is really big here, so I love anything having to do with Gothic storytelling. So Cemetery Girl is very cool, and I always appreciate Gothic stories. But we like to ask a question, and it's if anyone has ever tried, have you tried sweet tea or possibly boiled peanuts, which are favorite snacks from the region I'm from?
Boiled snacks?
Boiled peanuts.
Yeah, boiled peanuts.
Boiled peanuts.
I mean, I confused them with boiled potatoes, another line entirely recently. But boiled peanuts, or indeed sweet tea.
Okay, I've definitely had sweet tea before, like hibiscus hibiscus refreshers, you know, heated. Or I've had this like orange tea, so like something citrus kind of. With like a tea bag, you know, heated up with the kettle.
Don't think that's the sweet tea they have in North Carolina somehow. But I mean, perhaps Jessica, you need to define the true definition of authentic North Carolina sweet tea.
Okay,
you'll have to try it when you come on tour here. The sweet tea that people like here is like, it's cold tea. It's basically black tea with a ton of sugar dumped into it that is then just served very cold with ice. And boiled peanuts are peanuts that are made with just salt and boiling, and they're kind of the consistency of a bean, and they're cooked in a whole peanut.
Okay.
And they're
Oh.
absolutely excellent. So when you're on tour in the South, you can try some.
Okay. All
They
right.
do come
So,
with a health warning, I believe, or they should do. I'm just saying, in terms of they're not necessarily packed with nutrition, but there we are.
yeah. So the peanuts are part of the black tea with a lot of sugar, correct?
They're
Correct?
two different things, but they're pretty good together.
Ooh, very okay. Yeah, so my mom makes like boiled peanuts in the morning sometimes with this breakfast food that she makes. So I've had that, and then I've had a bunch of different teas actually. I don't like green tea because it gives me an upset stomach, but I think I've only had black tea a couple times, so I'm not a huge fan. But I like throat coat. I like that orange tea and hibiscus and berry teas. So. Yeah, I think tea goes well with. Oh, and I really like chamomile. And that's about it. Yep.
Are there any kind of, I know that some singers will use like honey before they perform. Are there any kind of things that you do like that to get ready for a show and get your voice ready?
I do scales. Let's see. I used to drink throat coat with honey because like when I first started making music when I was like 14 or 15, I had this band and I'd play gigs for like, we'd be singing for like 3 hours straight, or we'd be playing for like 3 hours straight with like 10-minute breaks in between our sets. So my voice would get super tired, so I'd need like honey and water on stage. So yeah, like a little pre-show ritual.
There will be people listening to this interview in Lincoln, England, not Nebraska, easily confused, but who'll be very, very keen to effectively find out more about Starship Gazelle and find out how on the socials and such like they can follow you. I mean, have you gone down the line of TikTok videos? Are you an Instagrammer? Or is it a case of no, I steer away from all of that with a vengeance?
No, I definitely want to involve myself on social media as well as start playing live again. But the Instagram has been dedicated to a lot of reviews and interviews lately, which is great. I might start posting some live videos on there as well. There's actually in addition to the live videos, there's a fun video of me doing a kickflip on a skateboard in my stories reel highlighted on Instagram, so my audience knows I'm not just a musician. I've got that little skateboard video, which I'm pretty stoked on. The Instagram has a long live video from me playing in a cafe for about, I think it's like a 5-minute video playing two songs or one and a half songs because the second song gets clipped. But yeah, I mean, I think it's got some of my live video stuff on it, and some reels with lyrics and the music, and photo shoot photographs of me. I actually reached out to this tattoo studio that featured my song in their playlist in Spain, so maybe I need to go to Spain to play live for them there. But that was pretty humbling too, to see them feature one of my songs in their tattoo studio's playlist. So
And you
yeah, I
can.
have a few tattoos actually. But yeah, definitely into using Twitter and Instagram as well as YouTube. But not
Well,
so much TikTok. Not so much TikTok. Yeah.
interesting. Elon Musk will be happy that you're still sticking with Twitter. I'm sure that Mark Zuckerberg would say, come and join us on Threads. I don't know. It's up
Oh
to the
yeah.
individual.
I actually did get a little Threads crazy when that technology first came out and launched Starship Gazelle's Threads and posted a bunch of fun lyric videos on there. So you can find my Threads as well.
Wow. Just
Yeah.
goes to show it's all connected together. And of course, a reminder that you can be found on literally the traditional Facebook.com Starship Gazelle, as well as the same line with respect to Twitter.com, as well as we mentioned as YouTube, of course, the Starship Gazelle channel. Are there any other particular, I mean, we talked about the birds. Are there any other sort of influencers or any other bands that you kind of think? I mean, I can't believe you never heard of the Spice Girls, but that's what, by the by. Any other sort of areas that you sort of like to have on your playlist, or is it a case of no, I like to be totally pure in case I'm contaminated by other people's music?
Oh no, I think my influences are all over the place, and I've heard of the Spice Girls, just never listened to their music, but as I think I've heard of them as like a pop culture phenomenon of some sort. Maybe they're like the Cheetah Girls. I don't know. I'll have to check them out. But anyways, I think my influences are Tallest Man on Earth. So on the second record, there's a lot of finger picking. He was a big inspiration for that. I learned some of his songs, and so I even used some of his tunings, actually. But, you know, created my own parts, my own chords, used some of his finger picking techniques to make the magic happen. So I really like that band. I think he's from Sweden, if I'm not mistaken. I saw him live recently. That was cool. I also really like Sufjan Stevens. Never Shout Never. So Sufjan Stevens has like a very dense, like folk, indie folk sound, you know, a lot of instruments, just like a hodgepodge of sounds, which is really interesting for me, especially on Greetings from Illinois. That record was super, super influential. There's a couple of songs on there that kind of I tried to embody on Hanabi Beach. And then I really like Never Shout Never for making, you know, I found his music when I was 14, so he's part of my childhood, but I really like how simple his songs are and how, you know, like he writes simple love songs and they're kind of bite-sized like some of my music. And what else? Just good pop songwriting. And, you know, he was trying to kind of embody some folk elements too. He likes the banjo. So Never Shout Never is a cool solo project out there. These three influences are actually all solo projects, which is interesting because I'm a solo project. And then I really like Young the Giant. You know, as the lead singer comes from an Indian background, that's super inspirational for me as a musician, since being an Indian American, you're not sure if the music thing's really going to work out, if you're going to have an audience based on your demographics. So that's pretty cool. But aside from, you know, the band's ethnic identity or whatever, I'm definitely attracted to some of their tones and the soundscapes they create, and they're really a cutting edge indie, you know, and they're a big name in indie, so definitely take huge inspiration from them. I'm seeing them live in a month. I've seen them live a handful of times. I think those are my influences.
Well, Shah, we're going to have another reprise of I Feel the Sun, brackets, Apple Pipe, close brackets, a song about a moment in the sun with friends and having a crush there that embraces your being according to your good self. You're falling for this girl and imagine a bright future with her. But before we actually head off to that, we have two final questions to put to you. I will ask them between the two of us. Jessica, would you like to ask the first?
I would absolutely love to. So have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes. No, this is super cool. I was honored to kind of have you guys ask me all these questions. This is one of my first in-person interviews. You know, I've had some typed written interviews before, but feeling like a famous person or a celebrity is very interesting to me, because I grew up watching a lot of band interviews and I take interest in that kind of thing. So being on the other end of that is super humbling, exciting, fun, outstanding. So I thank you guys for your time. Yeah.
Well, we're delighted that you were able to get up in time. Because for a musician, I appreciate 9 a.m. is a hell of an early time. I mean, you know, if we'd said sort of 4 or 5 p.m. in the afternoon, maybe that would have been like early breakfast time. But 9 a.m. in San Diego, pretty heavy. So the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to join us again? Will you come back via Zoom or some other medium to actually keep us appraised in Lincoln, England, and arguably Charlotte, North Carolina, what exactly you're getting up to?
Oh, are you saying, am I going to make it through to those towns to play?
No, I'm saying, will you come back on the show and talk about all sorts of manner of things, even if you can't get to the towns?
Yeah, of course. I'd love to be back on the show whenever. Yeah.
Shah Gupta, indeed. Shah, of course, creator of Starship Gazelle. He is Starship Gazelle, Shah Ragranza. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And have a great day.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Alex.
We'll be right back. And it's time now for the very final segment of a series of interviews we did whilst on location in London through the magical mode of a mobile phone. Yes, I'll say that, a mobile phone, because that pretty much explains why the quality of the audio is not what you've normally come to expect from the great, wonderful Siren Radio, and in particular, the Midwick Drive.
Are we there yet? The summer road trip, the challenge with respect to travelling on the roads with children, especially those in the terrible twos, etc. How do you cope with that? Well, we basically sort of wish to address some of these key angles with respect to one of the sort of aspects that this whole relates to, by actually speaking to, from Churchill, no less a person than Rachel Lynch. How are you, Rachel?
Hello, nice to meet you.
Well, likewise, and I gather that you have a Lincoln connection as well, is that right?
That's right. 20 years ago this September I started at Lincoln, so it's a little while ago. It looks very different now.
Well, you know, if it helps, I started there actually back in 1993 when it was with the University of Humberside, but, you know, it just goes to show. But you're a mum of two folk, of course, Rachel. You've got two children aged 2 and 5, so you've got lots of experience in terms of this. But singing the kids a song, I mean, how many times can you actually say the wheels on the bus go round and round, or indeed other things, to actually entertain them? I mean, is it just a case of we need to get Baby Shark by Ping Pong sorted out as soon as possible?
Well, it turns out from my experience, you can sing wheels on the bus more than you think over and over again if you really need to. But yeah, any of those tips to keep your children awake in the car is good. So obviously, children falling asleep in the car for a parent is a nightmare. It pushes their bedtimes back. Actually, Churchill's recent research has highlighted that it actually pushes their bedtimes back by 54 minutes, which means delayed bedtime, which means a cranky child. And some parents also flag that children aren't eating properly after their nap. So tiredness and hunger is not ideal as a parent. So nearly half of them are active trying to keep the children awake in the car. Unfortunately, this means a third of them are actually taking their hands off the wheel and 11% are actually taking their eyes off the road. So it's important to just use those tips and tricks that you've got that are safe in the car.
I mean, that's the key thing, of course, because, I mean, this notion of danger naps that was the research from Churchill has revealed, you obviously, if you're driving in particular, you need to make sure that your attention is given fully onto the road. So ideally, you want your children to be nicely sorted out in that blissful sleeping heaven at the back, etc. Can timing help in terms of actually when you set off for journeys, etc.? Or is it just a case of, no, it doesn't matter what circadian rhythm they're on, they're still going to have challenges?
Timing, for me personally, timing, yes, I ideally try to aim for when they're due to have a nap. But unfortunately, day-to-day life gets in the way of it. A post-school pickup, a post-after-school pickup is a real danger zone for children falling asleep. And actually, it's so close to their bedtime. But to keep your hands on the wheel is really important. So for those who get caught with their hands not on the wheel, they can be prosecuted for not being in control of the vehicle. So it can be 3 points on your license, £100 fine, or at worst, you can be disqualified, which is a lot worse for parents who are reliant on their vehicle than a danger nap. So it's just really important that the research shows there are lots of ways parents are keeping their children awake, making silly noises, playing music, singing them a song, opening the windows. All of them are much safer ways to keep the children awake.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Happy by Pharrell Williams is in there as well, as you mentioned, Ping Pong. I don't know. Maybe it's my age, but I just have to step away from that sort of thing. But Rachel, I mean, clearly other things you can use are opening car windows, lowering the temperature, music, of course, we alluded to. What about audio stories? Can that help?
I mean, I think it just depends on the child, really. The research doesn't break down audio stories, but absolutely, I think it depends on child's age. So I know my 5-year-old would stay awake to audio story. My 2-year-old, it would send him asleep. So I think it's just really just trial and error with your own children and seeing what works. And yeah, and the same, I mean, you mentioned the music. I think it's what works and also what music parents are willing to put up with. So Baby Shark was the most used song to keep children awake. So for me, that would be last resort. But I'm not afraid to pull it out if I need to.
And indeed, clearly, as we are not yet in the full era of driverless cars, if you're caught by the police with without your hands on the wheel, you can have prosecution issues, 3 points on your license, £100 fine. We don't want that. And obviously, worst case scenario, you have an accident. So this is important stuff. Rachel, where can people find out more details about this research from Churchill?
So you can find out more details on Churchill's corporate site, so that's directlinegroup.co.uk, and there's a Churchill brand news section. I mean, what I would say is in there, parents are probably familiar with all the tips that are included. All of the results against each tool the parents use was around the same score, which sort of suggests to me that potentially they're trying them all. What it does reiterate is just really just please be safe on the roads, try not to get distracted enough to take your hands off the wheel, and keep your eyes on the road. We appreciate it's difficult, so we're just here to remind parents really to just stay safe while they're driving.
Yeah, well, it just goes to show it's worthwhile sort of locking into place. Rachel Lynch from Churchill, of course, and of course, as well as being a mother of two fine souls, alumnus from the University of Lincoln. What did you study at Lincoln, by the way, Rachel?
Media and advertising, so I haven't strayed too far, have
wow.
I?
Wow. Well, it just all starts into place, really. It's always nice to keep the Lincoln family growing. But for the moment, keep on keeping on, and I'm sure we'll speak again very soon.
Thank you. Nice